Welcome to the Sudden Victory Podcast, presented by Wide Right Natty Light. I'm Sam Phillips here with Jacob England, ready to talk about Iowa State's phenomenal national tournament. They finished fourth in the country, their best finish since 2010, obviously the best finish of the Kevin Dresser era, and this program just continues to climb and climb and climb. After having a couple weeks to digest NCAAs, how are you feeling about it, Jacob?
Bittersweet. A little sad that we won't see David Carr in an Iowa State singlet again, but extremely opportunistic about the future of Iowa State.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what a coronation for David Carr. Phenomenal, all-time great Iowa State Cyclone NCAA tournament to go through the path that he went to. He was one of just two national champions that had to beat four All-Americans on their way to the title. So an incredibly deep, test after test after test for David Carr. And maybe we start there, Jacob. I don't want to bury the lead. National champion David Carr. I know you're excited to talk about it. I guess, what were your thoughts? I was very worried about him being able to get back on top coming into this tournament, and he just did the damn thing.
Yeah. I knew that in the Big 12 tournament, he wasn't, on par per se of what he was. But coming in, he looked like a madman, and he continually, went and won. Dean Hamity, he won very convincingly. It was almost just a butt whooping. Like, Hamity couldn't do anything. David was constantly throwing him down. He was on the, offense constantly. That's when I kind of knew that it's going to be a really good match. So, and we can talk about this more, but that semifinals with Keegan O'Toole, that actually worried me very much when Keegan was ahead by 20 seconds left.
Oh my God, Jacob, match of the tournament, in my opinion, of the tournament.
And I think he brought a great game plan, and that game plan was to wear out Keegan O'Toole, because we all know Keegan O'Toole will just be relentless. But how long can you be relentless? Nobody's like a Parker Kekizen. That man is just a wild man. He's a man on fire. Keegan O'Toole is a very similar type of person, but I don't think he has the gas tank. And I think David Carr figured that out. Especially that Keegan O'Toole, I am not putting any knock on him. He is one of the best wrestlers in NCAA history. But when you pin that many people and you make things look really easy, your conditioning can make an effect. And I think David made that as a plan and yes, he got called for stalling, but he made Keegan work for every single move, and he didn't put himself in bad position, which I really loved.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jacob. Fatigue was definitely a factor in that match. And I think that's another reason why we will see O'Toole move up to 174 next year. I think it's a pretty big cut for him to get to 165. David Carr, phenomenal game plan from the staff and well executed by Carr there. It was a scoreless first period. And I'm thinking back now to one situation where Keegan O'Toole was very close to having a takedown on the edge of the mat. That front headlock position. And you could tell that even though he won the last two meetings between the two, he still had a tremendous amount of respect for how dangerous David Carr is, because in a high school match, you just finish that against a lesser opponent. You just finish that. And Keegan O'Toole's club coach, Ben Askren, said afterwards, I think someone asked him, hey, did you think that was a takedown? And he's like, no, not really, because if O'Toole really had control in that situation, then he would have continued moving, and O'Toole got to where it was maybe a takedown if the call goes your way. And he just had to freeze because he knew there was nothing. He couldn't move at all without David Carr being able to counter and putting himself in a worse position. So
I remember that, because didn't that go to a review they were looking at it?
Exactly.
And it was, he didn't have full control of the ankle or like
I can't remember, sort of like a front headlock where David Carr was in on O'Toole's right leg.
Yes.
And O'Toole was spun around with the with David Carr's right ankle hooked. But
yes, but Carr he
still had the leg.
And he didn't spin all the way around. Yeah. Yes, that's the whole thing. If Keegan would have spinned all the way around, that would have put him into danger position, because how many times have we seen David Carr limp that leg out and come back around through there? And granted, you know, that was a 50-50 shot, because everybody and their mother says, well, if you hook the leg, you get a takedown. Well, David also had his leg locked. Yep. And it
and
wasn't
exactly that's exactly what was keeping Keegan O'Toole from being able to score there, because Carr is so good. If he has that leg, even if you think you have the hips beat, he can swing that leg back around, or he can dip the shoulder and get to an advantageous position.
How bittersweet was it when it was 20 seconds left? I'm not gonna lie, I was a Debbie Downer when Keegan got the takedown, and you know, David got back up and it was 2-point match, and you're sitting there going, okay, well, I don't know if David can do this. And David, I think it was a single leg, wasn't it? Or was it a double that he did? I think it was a single leg. One of his classic
His first takedown?
No. Or his the last takedown. The last one.
The last takedown was it started as a single and then he doubled off.
Yes. That was kind of his bread and butter, that what he would do. And you knew that Keegan O'Toole, right when he grabbed the leg and Keegan went onto his hip, he knew he was kind of toast, because number one, you could tell he was completely gassed. And number two, David was in the right position and he wanted it more. And you could tell.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, David Carr just wrestled phenomenally. And we got to talk about, I mean, you know, get the scoreless first period, head to the second. Keegan O'Toole chooses down and David Carr gets 40 seconds of riding time. He does give up a penalty point there, because of stalling, because David Carr loves to sit right on the fence on whether he should cut the guy or not in that rear standing position. But then, David Carr didn't just sit and say, okay, I'm going to take a 1-0, I'm going to go into the third period down 1-0. He wasn't content with that. Went in his second period takedown. I think history is going to remember that last one, and for good reason. It's an incredible shot there with the coaching staff going wild and all that. It's the match clincher. But that second period takedown was so crisp. He hits this super duck from like a million miles away, way further out than any average wrestler should even consider it. And then is able to snag the ankle of Keegan O'Toole and then finish that single leg there, with 30 seconds left in the second period. And then also get riding time up to 54 seconds, which, you know, wasn't a huge deal because he didn't get riding time in this match, but it gave him, you know, with how good Keegan O'Toole is on top, it gave Carr, you know, that extra buffer where he could have that confidence on bottom, and then takes that confidence, gets out right away in the third period to make it 4-3, and then that's where that Keegan O'Toole takedown comes in with 53 seconds left. And you're going, oh my gosh, he had the lead, had that first takedown, and now he's down 6-4. How is he going to do this? Keegan O'Toole's a monster on top. Carr gets away with 35 seconds left and is right on Keegan O'Toole. And then there's that single leg into a double with just the, crumbling finish, I guess you could say. And you're absolutely right. There was one stoppage in between there where Keegan O'Toole just took forever to get back to the center. And That's when it felt like, oh shit, I think David Carr he's, I don't want to say broke, but he ain't wrestling at his best self right now. Carr can win this last 30 seconds. And that's exactly what he did.
Mm-hmm. And you could tell that Keegan was spent because of what the game plan that David Carr did. And that was to make him wrestle his own David's match. Like we talked about over at the Big 12s, David wrestled Keegan O'Toole's match. Well, guess what, Keegan? You just wrestled David's match. And that should be, if any kids are listening, I know that sometimes we get a little bit vulgar with our language. But in all retrospect, if any high schoolers or even junior hires or if even college people are listening to this, the guts that David Carr had in that last 30 seconds, most 99.9% of people would start thinking negatively, saying, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can take him down. I don't know if I can get that extra, you know, shot. And you know how many wrestlers in this tournament I seen that had 20, 30 seconds left and they just didn't give it their all. Like they just kind of gave up, their spirits were down. Not David Carr. David Carr had confidence in himself. And if I could take anything away from that is never lose confidence, because until that whistle blows, you still have a shot. And I just, that's a testament to David Carr and his career and his legacy that will never be forgotten. But I was just thoroughly impressed with what David Carr put out on the mat, because, you know, that's guts and glory. That's what wrestling's all about.
Yeah, that was, like I said, the match of the tournament, and that set up the NCAA final. David Carr there for the third time, taking on undefeated redshirt freshman Mitchell Messenbrink of Penn State. Fun fact, Messenbrink's dad actually wrestled for Drake back when they had a D1 program.
Hmm.
And grew up in Wisconsin. Another Askren Wrestling Academy kid, went to the same high school as Keegan O'Toole. So they actually had a third Askren wrestler who I think went to the same high school in this bracket, this 165-pound bracket, Noah Mulvaney from Bucknell. So that is a pretty incredible stat there. But Mitchell Messenbrink came in here with an undefeated record and left with one loss as David Carr wins the national title. And he started it off with fireworks, Jacob, hitting that blast double 7 seconds into the match. It was one step backwards, and then because he knew Messenbrink is just going to go forward, forward, forward. So Carr goes one step backwards and then boom, that low double. We've seen David Carr hit it a million times. Jordan Burroughs, the best double legger in U.S. history, was on the broadcast and was just beside himself at how good this double was. And I was a little bit nervous about this one because Penn State does phenomenal in finals matches. But once David Carr hit that double, I'm like, all right, he's winning this match.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what won this one was David Carr's experience. I mean, going after Keegan O'Toole a two-time, could have been a three-time, but didn't make it. I know I have to put a little dig in there. But a two-time national champion, you're going against Hamady, one of the best in the business. And then this redshirt freshman, you know, why not just hit him with all you got, you know, with a ton of bricks, literally right into his chest. And that happened. And I think that shell shocked Messenbrink a little bit, because I don't think he was expecting to be hit that hard.
Yeah. And then David Carr followed it up. You know, a lot of times guys get early takedowns and you're like, okay, maybe the guy who got taken down just kind of wasn't ready for the match to start. And then he'll, get up right away or get out on the first restart. David Carr freaking held Mitchell Messenbrink down for almost 2 minutes in that first period before giving up the escape, and brought a boatload of riding time into the second period. And that's where the refs tried to put Messenbrink back in this match, because we mentioned Carr play that. When you're in rear standing position trying to return a guy, it says you have 5 seconds to, I don't even know if 5 seconds is officially in the language, but you are supposed to attempt to return. A lot of times people get antsy and say it's been 5 seconds and he hasn't returned. It's not that you have to return. You have to make a committed attempt. And that's what David Carr did very well. At times throughout the tournament and throughout this season, he maybe pushed it a little bit too much. But to be honest with you, most guys with David Carr's accolades get the benefit of those calls from the refs. So I'm shocked that the refs worked so hard to put Messenbrink back in this match, especially because David Carr was the one committing to attacks. Messenbrink did a good job of going forward, but he wasn't getting Carr to back out of bounds, and he wasn't even getting Carr to back to the edge. Carr was backing outside of the inner circle, but not to the edge. And Carr would attack. Carr would circle in. I think that first stalling call was when David Carr took a step back and then got back in on a shot. Actually, no, that was in the third period. So that first one must have been for the lack of returns. And then that second one, the second one was for, I don't even know what they called them for, because there was one where, right after Messenbrink escaped, they were on the edge of the mat. And
yes,
I think Carr was out of bounds already when Messenbrink escaped. And then they hit David Carr for the escape, even though the wrestling action of Messenbrink trying to escape brought them to the edge of the mat. And that is, you know, folk style collegiate wrestling fans always say, we don't want to push out. We don't want it to end up like freestyle wrestling. Guess what? This is the exact situation that they are trying to prevent. And it went wrong in the national finals. Can't have that. Refs got to be better there. And then David Carr, that second stalling call for David Carr was where he backed up a little bit. And then immediately, as soon as he got hit with stalling, David Carr is in on a shot and getting a second takedown of the match to take a 7-2 lead at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I understand the stalling, but I don't understand it at the same time. The one stalling call where escape, that was just totally ridiculous. I think that should have just been, you know, wrestling, you know, just keep on going. The second one is when Messenbrink was taking a ton, and you could admit, a ton of half shots. He wasn't fully committed to him.
Oh, absolutely not.
And so, you know, when David showed that, hey, I'm going to, you know, reciprocate. He would actually go and grab the leg, but then they would call him for another stalling, which is just doesn't make sense at all. So there's something a little fishy in the water, but David didn't care. That's the whole point. After that second takedown, I was feeling extremely comfortable. I know that I got a little bit closer in the third period, but at the end, I'm like, nah, there's no way. There is no way David's going to let this go.
Yeah. So third period, Carr goes into it with a 7-3 lead, gives up one stalling point trying to ride out Messenbrink, and then gives up a takedown and Messenbrink cuts him. And you're just like, okay, if the refs don't hand this one to Messenbrink, Carr is savvy enough. He's not going to lose this match. And then at the end, it seemed like Messenbrink, people said he forgot that Carr had riding time. I don't know how you could forget getting ridden for like a full period by David Carr. It's just like, what did you think? How did you think that was going for you? I think he had sort of gassed himself out in that moment. And so David Carr wins the match 9-8 on riding time. Gets two great takedowns in that match against Mitchell Messenbrink and is your national champion. He finishes as a Cyclone legend, 4-time All-American, 3-time NCAA finalist, 2-time national champion, once at 157 in 2021 and once at 165 in 2024. So bookends his national tournament appearances with those title finishes. And then also had that third place finish in 2022 and the runner up finish in 2023. I feel like it's a disservice to David Carr to just put just talk about his accolades, because he is such a leader for this team and such a personality that brings people to Iowa State, where you have Kevin Dresser saying in interviews that other coaches are telling him, hey, tell Carr to quit trying to recruit my guys to Iowa State.
Well, and, you know, not only that, but you have to think that David Carr was rebuilding Iowa State. And it's hard to say that, but it's honestly the truth. Iowa State was in a very rough spot before Carr came in. And with, you know, Kevin Dresser, St. John, Metcalf, and David Carr as one of their spokesmen, per se, they have built this program to withstand a lot of weathering and breaking down. They've built a great foundation, and, you know, hats off to David Carr and sticking with it and trusting the staff and trusting Iowa State that, that he could get where he is today. And, but we also have, as Iowa State fans and alumni and, also just Iowa State in general, the college itself needs to probably thank David Carr, because David Carr has helped build Iowa State to what their standing is today in an athletic sport.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, David Carr is synonymous with Iowa State now. As far as his post-collegiate plans, immediately after the tournament, it sounded like things were not finalized, but he may be staying on as a recruiting coordinator for Iowa State wrestling while he continues to train with Cyclone RTC. I am sure he will have some big time money offers to go to some other wrestling clubs and train for the Olympics. But I know that Ames means a lot to David Carr. And I know that Cyclone RTC and Kevin Dresser have been fundraising to keep him around. You know, they know that they have known for years that he's going to get other offers, and they want him to stick around Ames and continue to keep recruiting for Iowa State. So I think that would be phenomenal.
Well, and I also think that Metcalf and Carr have a huge bond. I mean, there's one of the wrestling videos where Metcalf was drilling with Carr, doing, you know, shots and reshots and reshots. And you could just tell that those two have bonded so close to each other that it would be extremely hard to train with someone else. He could, but I see him as a Cyclone for life.
Yeah, I would certainly love to see that. As far as the Olympic trials go, I think he was pretty non-committal. Carr is qualified now with that national title to wrestle in a loaded 74 kg weight class. You know, you've got, I'll just talk about some of the 74 kg guys here trying to make this U.S. team. Jordan Burroughs, the GOAT, Jason Nolf, Keegan O'Toole, Mitchell Messenbrink, David Carr, Carter Staraki, Quincy Monday, Alex Marinelli, Alex Facundo, Tyler Berger, Alec Pantaleo, Meyer Shapiro, Levi Haynes, Jarrett Jacques, Ladarian Lockett, like just a who's who in an absolute gauntlet. And that's just in the challenge tournament. You got Kyle Dake sitting in the finals of that tournament.
Not that I don't think he would do excellent, but that is a gauntlet. You know, that's something that I think would be extremely hard to make, even if you're a Staraci or a O'Toole or Haynes or whoever it may be. That would be just an absolute brutal, brutal qualifying round.
Yeah, especially, I mean, like David Carr didn't wrestle freestyle last offseason and really made the gains against Keegan O'Toole, I think, by focusing on beating him. I think he can wrestle with a Jason Nolf for the spot, you know, next year when they've got time to game plan and Carr can focus on training freestyle. I think it would be a tall task to ask him to do that 2 weeks after. But then again, he's wrestling the best that he has of his career right now. So maybe you strike while the iron's hot.
Maybe, like I said, you never know. All I can say is he deserves to do whatever he wants to do. If he wants to recruit for Iowa State, by God, bring the best of the best to Iowa State. Because, dang, it certainly looks like he could really, really, really impact Iowa State even after being in the program as a wrestler.
Yeah. And I know Carr wanted a trophy for Iowa State before he left. Unfortunately, the NCAA decided to save a buck here and give out 3 team trophies this year instead of 4, even though, you know, college football playoff, the top 4 teams, it's a huge deal to be a CFP semifinalist. NCAA basketball, it's a huge deal to make the Final 4. Wrestling, I guess they just get three, but Carr wrestled his tail off, gets the tech fall over the MAC champion in the first round. Majors, Hunter Garvin, an Iowa City West grad wrestling for Stanford now, who plays sixth in this bracket and gets that shutout win over Dean Hamady, a two-time All-American, who has now said that he's going to transfer to Oklahoma State next year for his senior season. So that's something to keep an eye on. But that's just even before Carr got to that match against O'Toole in that match against Messenbrink. So gauntlet there by David Carr.
That is a huge gauntlet. I'm just so happy that he could finally put the stamp on 2024 and his career as an Iowa State wrestler and come out on top.
Yeah, for sure. Let's hit this weight by weight now. And we have a couple All-Americans to talk about on the way there. 125, Kyson Terracina ends his tournament at 1-2 again. Gosh, I don't know. He wrestled really good, I think, against Pat McKee in the first round. Final score was 9-4, but that was a 6-4 match with Kyson Terracina in on a leg late in the third period, and he just couldn't finish. You know, that was kind of the story of his season, except for against Eric Barnett. Terracina could generally wrestle tough guys really well and put himself in position to win those matches, just couldn't close them out.
Yeah, and that's just unfortunate for him. I'm hoping that this next year, when he goes and finishes out his career, he can finally get on top and be able to be that All-American that he wants to be. I just feel like he constantly falls just a touch short. So my hope and my wish is that he's able to get over the hump.
Yeah. Yeah, I sure hope so. Terracina has at least one season left. He could have two seasons left if he decides to use a medical redshirt for last season when he was hurt in the All-Star duel. 133, redshirt freshman Evan Frost gets it done. All-American with a sixth place finish. He gets the, honestly, Jacob, I thought he started out, him and Casey Swiderski both, I thought, started out pretty tentative in this tournament. More so than I thought, especially coming off of good Big 12 tournament performances. So Frost gets an 8-5 win over Braden Basile from Army in the first round. And, you know, it didn't really ever feel like it was in the balance. Yes, Frost gave up the first takedown, but we're kind of used to that by now as Iowa State wrestling fans. And then he gets Arizona State's Julian Klebo in the second round. And that one, Jacob, looked like it was going to overtime at 1-1 until Evan Frost finishes that takedown with 6 seconds left in the match to win it in regulation. That's going to be a fun one in the Big 12 next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'd be just a dynamic 133-pound weight class. Not to mention, Dayton Fix is done. He's gone.
Yeah.
And so now
we can talk about that now, because that could be a title match next year. And Evan Frost had one last shot at Dayton Fix there in the quarterfinals, took it to the tiebreakers, 1-1, and just couldn't get it done.
We need to talk about this, because I think Evan Frost was robbed on that overtime match.
He was
hard.
It was certainly a bad call. What happens? They go to the tiebreakers. Each wrestler gets 30 seconds on top, or, you know, first wrestler gets their choice, top, bottom, defer, neutral. And Dayton Fix chooses down, gets out super quick. I want to say it was like 4 seconds. It was like to the point where you're not even, it would just be stupid to bank on Evan Frost getting away that quick, especially from someone who is as savvy as Dayton Fix. So then Evan Frost chooses neutral when it's his choice. He needs a takedown or he needs a stalling point to win this match, because that would tie it and he would have 7 seconds of riding time and win on that criteria in the tiebreakers. And Evan Frost gets in deep on a single leg there. He's in the waterfall position, and
It's like 10 seconds left.
Yeah, 10 seconds left. Frost is making progress. It's just an inexplicable stoppage by Angel there, the referee and Dresser said it after the match. He said, yeah, I mean, what do you expect? Angel's not a good referee. So pretty brutal comments there. But the only reason, and it's definitely a bad call that benefited Oklahoma State in that match. The only reason I'm not ready to call it a robbery is because even in the position Evan Frost is in, it's not probably not even a 90% finish, probably still like 50-50, 60-40, maybe.
Right, but what? But why
he,
I say
he still should get that chance.
Right, and that's what I think is called a rob, because now you've taken him out of that position, put him back into neutral. Now Dayton Fix, all he has to do is run.
Yeah,
that's all he has to do. So now you've put both, you know, Oklahoma State in a great position and Iowa State in a god-awful position with Frost and Dayton Fix. What do you expect Frost to do at that point? Like, at that point, he knew that it was over. So I am going to call that a robbery just because there was progress made. He was getting his arm out, and you could tell he's going to be turning at that point. Just let him wrestle. That's what we call let him wrestle, because if that wouldn't have happened, who knows what would have happened in that last 10 seconds. Dayton Fix is a great wrestler, so he could have gotten out. Or Frost could have controlled that position, turned around, and grabbed his waist, and it had been game over.
Yeah.
But they didn't. The refs took it by chance, or took away the chance and made it their match, and that's what pisses me off.
Yeah, it was hard to stomach for sure there. So losing that quarterfinal, Frost drops into the blood round and has to beat a guy coming off a couple wins in a row to earn All-American status. His opponent in the blood round was Tyler Wells, a freshman from Minnesota. And this one was gritty, gritty, gritty. No takedowns in the first period. Frost chooses down, gets out in 6 seconds. So super quick there. And then in the third period, it is an escape for Tyler Wells, but not until a minute and a half into that third period. And because of Frost's very quick escape, he's got a minute 30 of riding time. That's all locked up. He wins the match 2-1.
Yeah, that was just, like you said, all of his matches were extremely gritty. And, you know, I think that next year, Frost will really turn on the burners, because like you said, Swiderski and Frost both looked pretty timid in their matches, didn't want to take any risks. And I think next year, they've both All-Americaned. They'll be more apt to take a little bit more of a risk, especially at matches that they're losing. And great win by Frost and to get into All-American status. And this upcoming match was even grittier, I say.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Jacob. Evan Frost in the consolation quarterfinals taking on Dylan Shauver of Rutgers, the number 4 seed, the Big Ten champion. And Frost goes out there, gives up the opening takedown. He's, you know, just stays calm, gets his escape. Second period, Shauver doesn't want to go underneath Frost. Shouldn't have wanted to go neutral either, because Frost will give you one takedown. He generally does not give you two. And that's where Frost struck. Took the lead there with a second period takedown, added an escape in the third period. And then doesn't give up two in a row. He gave up a second takedown there in the third period and a stalling point. Got a stalling point because Shauver just backed up and backed up and backed up. And we know Evan Frost loves to attack in that third period. So that sent it to overtime. And that's where Evan Frost was like, all right, it's time to quit pissing around and let's go win this match.
Yeah, he struck the iron and the iron was hot there. Extremely gritty win, especially how things were going. And, way to stick it out. Extremely excited, extremely happy with him getting as far as he did. I think the next day, I think the inexperience kind of showed a little bit, and just not knowing when the NCAA tournament was, kind of showed a little bit in the next match. And I mean, kudos to Michigan's guy being able to continue on even losing in that semifinal round. So
yeah. Yeah. So after that match, Frost drops one to Lehigh's number 2 seed, Ryan Crookham, and then drops the 5th place match to Dylan Ragusan from Michigan, who, just like Evan Frost, lost a very controversial match to Dayton Fix to send him to the backside.
That was a very – Dayton Fix got very lucky in his quarters and semis, but he did not get lucky in the championship round.
No, he did not. And 133 is an interesting weight. A lot of really good freshmen and sophomores in that weight class. I think what were there? There were at least 3 freshmen All-American with Crookham, Nasir Bailey, and Evan Frost. But you have your top 2 guys. Dayton Fix graduated high school in 2017. Vito Arujao graduated high school in 2017. They're finally gone and freeing up, you know, the top of the podium in that weight class. That's going to be super fun to watch next year.
Well, not to mention the freshmen were pushing the seniors.
Yeah,
they were. I mean, it was an extreme. It's extremely exciting to watch and see these young men come in and push these older men and kind of make them sweat a little bit.
Yeah, they definitely did. 141 Iowa State, you know, they had a nice run here from getting an All-American at 33, 41, and 49. Anthony Etchemendia comes in as the 5 seed, gets it done, gets that 5th place finish, and looked good doing it. I mean, I really wasn't worried about him in any of his matches for the first day and a half of this tournament, which is unlike pretty much every other Iowa State wrestler. Anthony Etchemendia gets that first round tech ball over Grayson Clark of Purdue. And then I shouldn't say I wasn't nervous, because I was nervous about this matchup with Josh Edmond, Jacob, because we know he's a very good wrestler. And Etchemendia just made it look easy, got 2 takedowns in that match to win it 8-2. And both those takedowns actually came in the first period. So just kind of cruised from there on out.
Yeah, well, after that one throw, I think you were nervous because that one throw, but
yeah,
you know, just as well as I do, after you get thrown once, you know, to think about it when you get into that match, that guy's a head thrower. I need to position my body differently. And that's what Etchemendia did. He didn't get into those risky positions. He said, okay, I can do outside shots. I can get his ankle. I can get his leg. And we can call it good. I don't need to get deep with him because it's a 50-50 round. I mean, and sometimes he did, but he was in good position every single time that Josh Edmond would come in, or he was on the edge of the mat. So, like, he was playing a very smart game.
Yeah, and the other thing is Etchemendia is so good in those body locks, too, where Edmond might have gotten 1. He's not going to get 5 out of 10 against Anthony Etchemendia. So he can still be pretty comfortable in there. Anthony Etchemendia then goes on in the quarterfinals and upsets the 4 seed Ryan Jack of NC State, gets it done 5-3, and really turned a lot of heads in this one. You know, judging by the score, it's not that big of a win, but just the way he did it and how much Etchemendia got to his attacks and how he was able to completely shut down the NC State wrestlers' attacks there. Just made people think, okay, this semifinal is going to be one to watch tonight.
Yeah. And I just really think that his confidence was flowing out, you know, really well. But when Jesse Mendez came in that semifinals, I'll be honest with you, Sam, I don't think his confidence was as high as it was with Jack.
Yeah.
I think that, after this, just like some of the other wrestlers that he's wrestled before, like Apple, after like a period and a half, then he figures out the moves and was pushing Mendez, but just did not get into that. Oh, what did I call it? Into the confidence that he needed right away. And that cost him. But I no judgment on there. I think he did a hell of a job getting to the semifinals.
Yeah, I was shocked with a couple things in this match. First, Mendez looked enormous. I mean, Anthony Echevarria is someone who came down from 149 this year and said after the tournament he's going up at least one weight class next season. So for Mendez to look bigger than Echevarria, you just don't see that often. Mendez gets that first takedown, and then it's like, okay, Echevarria is much improved on his mat wrestling, but against the elite mat wrestlers like Jesse Mendez, it's still a vulnerability, and it's just hard for Echevarria to win matches when he spends as much time on the mat as he did in this one. He did, like you said, Jacob, got him figured out there in the third period to get that takedown. It just wasn't enough to close the gap. Needed another takedown, and Mendez was fundamentally sound enough to stop that from happening. So Echevarria drops that match 6-4 and then goes on to the backside and drops the consolation semifinal to Iowa's Rael Woods 4-0. And what was really, I thought, kind of a snoozer of a match compared to what my expectations were based on how that went in the dual meet.
Yeah, I just think that I don't know what it is. And you know, just as well as I do, when a wrestler goes and loses a match, you have to take time to process it and understand what has happened. I don't think he necessarily processed it as fast as what Rael Woods did, but I also think Rael Woods had time where people who lose in the semifinals, because you're one match away, you're there to the finals, and you lose to a very close match. You knew that you might have, you know, you could have won that match if you'd done something different. We call it, you know, the wrestling hangover. You got to let it go. And I just think Rael Woods put himself in a little bit better position than what Echevarria did. And I honestly, honest to God, I think Echevarria being a neutral wrestler is a better wrestler than what Rael Woods is. And he just, like I said, just didn't have the confidence that we saw all year. But it's a long tournament, and it's a brutal tournament too.
Yeah, it is. So Echevarria picks up the medical forfeit from Lachlan McNeil of North Carolina in that fifth place match. And, you know, All-American in his first trip to the tournament. Gotta love that. Wrestled to seed, had a phenomenal performance all weekend long. So good stuff there from Echevarria. Gotta think he finds a spot in the lineup next year. Not sure. We just got to figure out the weight class, but that's something to talk about in the off season. Casey Swiderski, the fourth All-American for the Iowa State Cyclones there at 149. And just like we talked about with Evan Frost, had a tentative start to his tournament, wins his first round match 2-1 on a stalling point in the third period over Army's Matt Williams. And then in the second round against the guy who Zach Redding had beaten, he beats Ethan Fernandez in the tiebreakers, which was surprising to me because Swiderski gave up the first takedown 10 seconds into that match and then, you know, comes back to tie it. They trade escapes and nobody can get the takedown in sudden victory until in the tiebreakers, where Swiderski rode out Fernandez in the first tiebreaker, took neutral, and just had to not get taken down, and then gets that takedown there to win the match 8-5. But how nervous were you in this match, Jacob?
I was a little bit nervous, but with Casey Swiderski, I always know that he's going to be in the match. If he's in the third period, he's not losing by an arm and a leg. I just had a feeling that Casey was not going to give or, you know, lose without a fight. And he did. He gave all he got on there. And like I said, he just didn't look the same. I remember I was at my job. I had the phone sitting there and I was just saying, come on, Swiderski, let's go. Let's go. You know, because it just, to me, I just think that the nerves get to the best of him and his emotions sometimes get him. But you know, after that first takedown and that escape, and when he took Fernandez down, I had a little more confidence than what at the beginning of the period.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. I mean, love to see Casey in those tight matches late. I think he wrestles really well there. I should say I love his odds in tight matches late. I just think it wasn't what I was expecting in that one. And then he comes out, his quarterfinal match against top ranked Ridge Lovett. I thought that I liked how much he was attacking, but it just wasn't the game plan to beat Ridge Lovett, because he ends up losing that match 14-4, which puts him in the blood round against Dylan D'Amelio, Jacob, who beat Casey Swiderski at the CKLV, the Ohio State wrestler. Very tough matchup for Swiderski, and he gets it done 2-1 in the tiebreakers, wins it on writing time there in that match.
Yeah, I mean, if we went to the beginning of the year and you said, hey, we're going to have a ton of tiebreakers in the NCAA tournament, and we're probably going to win at least 60 to 70% of them, I would have said, you're kidding. I think you're actually joking, because that is so hard. And that's, like I said, this is a testament to Iowa State staff, giving them the confidence to continue even when their backs are against the wall. I mean, think about it. Jacob Frost went, or no, not Jacob, Evan. Evan, I gotta think, twins. Evan Frost went through how many, 2 or 3 overtimes?
Yeah, a couple. Well, and then some 1-point matches too.
1-point matches. Then you got Casey Swiderski, who went through 2 or 3 overtimes and a couple 1-point matches. You've got David Carr, who's won 2-point matches. You really think about it, last year would have been a tough situation, especially where their mindset is. And this year, they drive and want to do better every single day. You can see that. And I thought that it's been really cool to see this, I would say, team as a whole continue to drive to be better. Even if they lost at the beginning of the year, they lost to guys, and then all of a sudden they just start pounding them or winning matches or doing things to get better. The growth has been exponential.
Yeah, for sure. So Swiderski gets that tiebreaker match, and then I don't know, had kind of a perplexing match after that, where West Virginia's Ty Waters whooped up on him 10-2 after Swiderski had beaten him in some victory in the dual meet. That was not the result that I expected there, but you know, weird things happen on the backside of the NCAA tournament. Swiderski did bounce back on Saturday with a major decision over Riders Quinn Kenner for that 7th place win, and Swiderski's first medal at the NCAA tournament. So good to see him get over the hump after last year was in that round of 12 match leading in the third period before he got put to his back.
Yeah. And I think we'll continue to see Swiderski grow and move and become even better wrestler than what he was this year, which is going to be I'm going to keep it PG, but a crap show when it comes to who's wrestling where.
Yeah, it is. 157, disappointing tournament for Cody Chittum. Really from the start, came out there in his first NCAA tournament and gets majored by App State's Tommy Askey. Gave up, 6 takedowns in this match? You know, after he gives up 2, or really starts forcing things, and it just wasn't his match. Bounces back in the night session, which can be tough to do as a freshman, and gets that win, tech fall win over Wachleski from Ryder. But then he just had a brutal path, Jacob. He gets returning All-American Michael Blockus there in his second consolation match and loses that one 14-13. They did give Chittum a point that would have tied it at some point in this match for an illegal hold, and then reviewed it and took that off the board. So that was kind of weird. But that being said, the path there was Chittum had to close out that match against Blockus, turn around in that session and beat Ryder Downey, and then go into Friday night and take out Jared Franick. So it was going to be an uphill battle once he dropped that first match to App State's Tommy Askey anyways.
Yeah, and I I really like what Cody Chittum has, everything that he stands for and his wrestling style. I still think that there's a lot to do, and that includes getting into situations where he shouldn't be getting into. And I saw in the NCAA tournament that he's still a little bit raw in that aspect. Nothing wrong with that. He's a first year in the college wrestling world. But I think they'll shore up on that in the off season, get him in a little more defensive wrestling moves, or get him into better positions than what he was this year, and strengthen him up. I think a good strength and conditioning program for a year will help him significantly. And I would actually see Cody Chittum being at the 165 pound weight class, just because I think that he has the ability to build up. It's either that or somebody, but I really see him taking over that 165 pound weight class. But going off subject there.
No, I think I could see him going up. I could also see him taking a red shirt. I know after taking that gray shirt year, coming into this year, he really didn't want to take a red shirt. I think after this season, I think the staff can say, okay, I think you need another year to get back into the folk style groove of things. And if you're really going to perform up to what you're capable of at the national tournament, and I think that could be beneficial, whether Cody Chittum agrees or not, who knows? But he's definitely capable of making jumps at this weight class, or 165, if that's where he ends up. And another, guy who made jumps, you know, after, I guess he got a lot of mat time last year, but it was technically a redshirt. And then this year as a redshirt freshman, MJ Gaitan makes the blood round of the national tournament.
Yeah. And just like Casey Swiderski, he just comes up short with it. I just, heck of a season by this man. You know, he really turned a lot of eyes towards him. Even the commentators were talking about him, saying, you know, you never know what this match is going to be. And you're what they say, you're never safe when MJ Gaitan is on that mat.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the truth. Unfortunately, that bit him in the butt in that first round matchup against Army's Ben Pazook, who ended up becoming an All-American, first All-American for Army since like 2007, I want to say.
Which, this was the first time I've ever seen MJ Gaitan get chippy with a wrestler. And Casey Swiderski was chippy with the Army wrestler as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Army's assistant coach was subtweeting Iowa State and about how they're a bad culture because of how they act in wins and losses and blah, blah, blah. Just weird stuff to say. You know, focus on your own guys. It's the national freaking tournament.
Well, and Army's guys weren't – I think they were getting really ticked off because Army was backing up constantly. It wasn't like they were really making shots.
And I mean, I don't know, here with this match, MJ Gaitan kind of reverted to his old self. I won't even say that. MJ Gaitan goes for a headlock in the first period in this match and dang near has it. I'm up off the couch ready for Iowa State to put some bonus points on the board. And then all of a sudden, Ben Pazook rolls him through not only for the takedown, but for a four near fall. And then right at the end of the third period, hits a suck back for four more near fall. So, if you build an 11-point lead in the first period, I think you can back up as much as you want.
Right. Well, I mean, that one I can understand. But like when you – I know we're going backtracking, but Kyson Terakina's match and Swiderski's match, when you watched both of them, they were constantly going on the edge of the mat every single time. And every single time Casey would shoot or Kyson would shoot, Army guys would back up. And then right when they were stepping out of bounds, the Army guy would circle to make it look like that they were trying to do a move per se.
Yeah, I guess Iowa State versus Army being a rivalry that came out of this tournament was not on my bingo card.
Me neither. I didn't think about that.
So Gaitan comes back in the wrestlebacks. to get wins three in a row to get all the way to the blood round, gets the pin over Ryder, gets a major decision over Rutgers' Jackson Turley, who is a very tough wrestler. And then in the round of 16, actually upsets Adam Kemp from Cal Poly, who was the number 8 seed. MJ wins that one 13-8, gave up the first takedown, but battled back to tie that going into the third period. And then just has a really good third period. Solid stuff there from MJ Gaetan. One of the best matches I saw him wrestle all season, in my opinion, to get into that blood round match.
Yeah, he was, I don't know what it is. The coaching staff will change this. I know they will. But every single time MJ Gaetan loses, it's like he has a fire underneath his butt and he just starts making a rampage through the backside of the bracket. Let's just eliminate that loss at the beginning and just start the rampage there. That'd be awesome.
I agree with you there. And then MJ goes and takes on the 3-seed Edmund Ruth of Illinois in the blood round. And
that was a tough match.
That was a super tough match. And he made Edmund Ruth open up, which if you watch a lot of Edmund Ruth matches, he does not open up unless he absolutely has to. And
he had to.
Yeah, that's what Gaetan's dynamic offense made him do.
So yeah, he was ahead too. I was so mad. I mean, not at him. It's just like the opportunity. Edmund Ruth just took it in the third period and just snatched it away. And that's what Edmund Ruth does. He's such a sound wrestler. He's good on his defense, and when he needs to make that shot, he does. And that's what he did with MJ Gaetan in that third period.
Yeah, and so unfortunately that ends MJ Gaetan's national tournament for his freshman campaign. I'm super excited to see what he gets up to next year. I also think, depending on how Iowa State wants to finagle their lineup, I'm not ruling out him taking over David Carr's spot. If they want to get like Manny Rojas in at 174, or if there's a transfer portal guy that's more of a 174 than a 165, just something to keep an eye on this offseason.
Or he could take the 184 spot.
Yeah. If he wants to bulk up. I know Tate Nachtaborn will be a strong contender for that spot. And then who knows what the transfer portal will have. I know Iowa State went to the transfer portal last year, and that's how they ended up with Will Feldkamp. The Wild Man gets the pin over Princeton's Nate Duggan in the first period, in the first round, got the opening takedown, and then got another feet-to-back move there for Feldkamp. It was that body lock trip series that it's a live by the sword, die by the sword kind of thing for Feldkamp. But when he's putting up bonus points at the national tournament, I love living by the sword.
Yep. And like we've talked about on the podcast and with Jacqueline too, he wasn't necessarily one to like burn the stat sheet and make it into like All American, even though he did last year. He was here to score bonus points and to, you know, provide an extra set of feet on the ground in the NCAA tournament when Marcus Coleman graduated. And I think he did a fantastic job, you know, putting Iowa State to the fourth place round, or fourth place in the national tournament. So, you know, he did his job, especially whenever he goes and pins guys like this.
Yeah. Iowa State placed above the Iowa Hawkeyes at the national tournament for the first time since 2007. That does not happen without Will Feldkamp getting that first round pin. He loses to Parker Kekeisen, who doesn't, comes back and wrestles against Reese Heller from Pitt, who had beaten Feldkamp earlier in the year. And Feldkamp gets a 15-5 major decision in that one.
Another bonus point.
Yeah, another bonus point there. And then he dropped a heartbreaker, giving up a late takedown to NC State's Dylan Fish back there in the round of 16. So, you know, Feldkamp, not that much time in Ames in a Cyclone singlet, just the one season, and unfortunately missed some time due to injury. But you look back, and I think about his time in Ames. You got that pin over Trey Munoz, who took third in this bracket at CKLV to give Iowa State that title. And you've got, you know, some other really fun dynamic moves. I know there are some disappointing results in there, but definitely a lot of good stuff in there too. And it ends with Iowa State climbing up to fourth place on the back of some Will Fellkamp bonus points.
Yep. I mean, even only being here for 1 year, he provided such a big impact to this year and to this team that not a lot of people will know. I mean, if you looked at the teams race, Penn State was leaps and bounds. They made historical history with making the most amount of points in an NCAA tournament since God knows when. And then the next five, six places were so close. Like, we were a point away from being tying third place. And we were, no, was it a half point or was it a point?
So Iowa State was 2.5 back of third place and 4 points out of second place. They were 1.5 ahead of Iowa, who took fifth place, and they were 4 points ahead of Arizona State, future Big 12 opponent, who took sixth place. So,
but even then, you think about that, that is not a lot. If you think about it, if God forbid, if David Carr did lose his match, we would have went from fourth place to probably sixth or seventh or eighth. That's how.
Yeah, it would have been a tie for fifth with Arizona State if Carr doesn't win that match.
Yes, and so that would have made Iowa, you know, above us and little brothers again. Whatever. I'm just saying, without Will Fellkamp doing what he did, wouldn't have put us in the position that he did. And so we have to thank him for his 1 year to be here, but absolutely magnificent year to be a part of Iowa State.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then Iowa State's ninth qualifier there, younger Bastida at heavyweight, comes in with the 2 seed. Unfortunately, it just was not his tournament, which really shocked me because he looked so good on day one. He gets the first period pin over Minnesota's Bennett Tabber. And then in the second round, he tech falls Luis Fernandez from Cornell, who, like, Luis Fernandez had wrestled younger Bastida to a one takedown match twice, Jacob. How all of a sudden was younger Bastida tech falling this dude?
And he figured something out. I don't know. The staff probably said, hey, this is an opening that you can take and Fernandez won't be able to get you. And that's what Bastida did. And he's been on a rampage, but unfortunately he just fell short and to a man that he beat before in the CKLV tournament. Yeah.
His championship side came to an end against Lucas Davison from Michigan, who, like you mentioned, younger won that match in the CKLV finals. Man, that was just a hard to watch match. After how good younger Bastida looked those first 2 days, I thought he looked significantly different in this one. He just backed up basically from the start of this match, and that's not like younger Bastida. Didn't stop him from getting a takedown in the first period, but even, you know, he was being much more tentative up to that point and then completely flipped the switch to, it really felt like trying not to lose for the last 6 minutes of that match to me.
Yeah.
So ends up, gets hit with stalling to bring the match within 1 point with 14 seconds left. So Younger has to stay in the middle. He does a really good job of, blocking Davison's first attack and doing some hand fighting, holding center, but just gets a little too aggressive with, like, 5 seconds left. And that allows Davison to snag that single leg, lift it up high, and finish on younger Bastida, which even to see him finish there, it was like, okay, something's not right with younger Bastida, because nobody finishes even when they get that leg up against younger Bastida.
Yeah.
Wyatt Hendrickson didn't. Jacob Warner never did. It was just crazy to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, Lucas Davison was on a rampage too. I mean, he made it to the finals.
Yeah, he took out Hendrickson in the semis.
Yeah, and not only took him out, but just absolutely pummeled him. So, you know, I just think that it was a mix between, which we can talk at the end, between Davidson's just ability to want to win, because it was his last year, and younger Bastida with an unfortunate injury that happened to him. I do think it takes a factor. I don't think it takes a huge factor, but it does take a pretty good factor into the what happened. And yeah. I can tell you, a week before the national tournament, Younger went and broke his finger, and he actually took a picture. If you guys ever want to see it, go to his account and look at his Twitter account. He actually has a picture of his finger, like in a 45 degree angle or probably 30 degree angle, whatever it may be, but it is pretty gnarly. And I think that does take a factor into it, especially with grip strength. You know how strong Bastide is and how big these men are. Have to have that grip strength. And I just, you've got to think that that played into a role, don't you think, Sam?
Yeah, it definitely did. Yeah, it definitely played into a role. And then, to be honest with you, on the backside of this bracket, it just seemed like sad boy hours because Bastide gets beat 8-3 by Rutgers, Yaroslav Slavikowski. And it just didn't look like the younger Bastide that we had seen all season. It looked like the younger Bastide we saw at the end of last season, especially on the backside of that Big 12 tournament bracket. So, you know, unfortunate, but I'm super excited to see younger Bastide bounce back for his senior season and hopefully climb to the top of the podium. And just, you know, do what we all know he can do and finish the job there at heavyweight next year. It's, you know, being so close to climbing into second place as a team, you look at this and it can be disappointing, but you know, you can say, hey, Iowa State didn't have a great tournament. I would disagree. I'd say they didn't have a perfect tournament, but freaking David Carr had an all-time run. You had three hammers come through to reach the podium at 33, 41, 49. And you had everybody contribute. You had Will Fellkamp contribute. You had Cody Chittum get bonus points. You had MJ Gaitan make a run to the blood round. And it all culminates with Iowa State getting their highest finish in almost 15 years, you know, placing above the in-state rival for the first time since 07, getting four All-Americans on the podium for the first time in like 15 years. Just a, I don't think there's any way you can look at that tournament and not be optimistic about it and say, hey, that was a phenomenal cap to the season.
Well, and you got to look at this. You've got Evan Frost, who's a redshirt freshman. No, he's a true freshman. No, he's redshirt. You've got Casey Swiderski. He's a true sophomore, going to be a true junior. Etchman Diaz, isn't he a junior or is he a sophomore?
His is the most confusing eligibility in the world. He's got, I think he'll be here for one more year. I've heard, him and Younger are likely to finish college wrestling together, and Younger's got one more year.
Okay. So you got one more year with Anthony Etchemendia. Then you've got Cody Chittum, who's a gray shirt freshman. And, you know, that's just in itself. You got MJ Gaitan, who's a redshirt freshman. Oh, and by the way, you've got Pinero Johnson in the backside ready to go. He's, you know, I know that he lost a year of eligibility, but he'll be a junior with Casey Swiderski, so we'll have him for another 2 years. The future is extremely bright, especially with the core still being here. Yes, we're going to miss David Carr. We're going to miss, you know, having that leadership, but he's still going to be there. And we will talk about this later, but it looks like we're starting to really get some great recruits in. And oh, by the way, keep your eyes out on the transfer portal, because I can see some, you know, fireworks happening with the Iowa State staff. I'm sure they're cooking up something.
Yeah, Iowa State's definitely a player in the transfer portal. You've got Tate Nachtaborn, who redshirted this year, along with some other hammers in that class. You've got Adrian Meza and Sawyer Bartelt, who both wrestled at the Pittsburgh Wrestling Classic on the USA All-Star team this past weekend. So those guys will be true freshmen next season. And then, yeah, it's just a really strong future for the Cyclones. But unfortunately, that means that some guys, you know, lose their spot. Jason Kreiser came into this program a couple of years ago and made the round of 16 last season at the NCAA tournament. Now doesn't have a starting spot, so he's hit the transfer portal. Definitely hope he can find somewhere where he can get a chance at the national tournament, because I think he can definitely do that, make a return to that tournament and win some matches. And also Ramazan Adesayev, who didn't really have a spot this year, went through senior day 2 years ago, I think was just kind of fed up with injuries and was ready to be done with wrestling. Turns out Illinois found out that he had a year of eligibility and convinced him to commit to the Illini. So he will be wrestling for a Big Ten program next season. And the interesting part about his announcement on Instagram is he said #125. I never thought Adesayev looked like a small 133. But if he could wrestle 125, frankly, I'm a little surprised he's not trying for the spot here. But if you are going to come back for a super senior year, I suppose you would want a guaranteed spot. And I'm really excited to see him back on the mat.
Yeah, I think it would be really awesome to see him again. That injury bug was definite factor for him, but nice to see him find a new spot and be able to provide Illinois to beat up on Iowa.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jacob, any other thoughts to wrap up this season? I think I'm all out of things to say for now.
I think I am too. I just, congratulations to the guys that made it, the guys that, got close. I think we'll see some great gains out in the off season, and, hats off to David Carr and his career, not only his career, but his legacy, not only to wrestling, but building a program that was well in the dirt, and, him making an impact for Iowa State, for future years to come. I think that's something that I should say.
All right, there you have it, folks. This has been another episode of the Sudden Victory Podcast presented by Wide Right Natty Light. Thanks for listening all season long. And Jacob?
Go Cyclones.